Tom Wilkinson is a British actor who impressed American movie audiences in 1997 with The Full Monty, where he played a laid-off factory manager who joins a ragged band of male strippers. He earned an Oscar nomination for the film In the Bedroom, where he and Sissy Spacek starred as a couple dealing with the murder of their only son. Wilkinson has been familiar to British TV and stage audiences for years, appearing with Helen Mirren in the Prime Suspect series and in many other roles. He began focusing on movies in the 90s, and his other film roles include Shakespeare in Love, The Patriot, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, Batman Begins, and The Exorcism of Emily Rose. Wilkinson stars in the new movie Separate Lies, which opens across the country September 30th. He plays James Manning, a high-powered British lawyer whose well-ordered life is shattered when he learns about his wife's infidelity and a hit-and-run accident which compels him to lie for his wife and her lover. Stephen Holden of the New York Times wrote, "Mr. Wilkinson nails every detail of this self-satisfied snob. The intimidating legal eagle glare that James directs at everyone, including his wife Anne, his oratorical speech that inflects even casual observations with an undertone of judgment." Here's a scene from Separate Lives in which Wilkinson and his wife, played by Emily Watson, are talking about what went wrong in their marriage.
"I've let you down, haven't I? I must have done, otherwise none of this would have happened."
"No, you haven't. It was my fault. I did it. I did everything. Can't we just leave it at that?"
No. We can't leave it. I need to understand it. Look, here am I thinking we are very happy, only to discover that on the contrary, we, or at any rate, you, are very unhappy."
"No."
"Well, what is it? Am I faultless? Am I unkind? Or is it something more prosaic? Am I a bad lover? Is that it? Is this together mind? Does he give you more orgasms than I do?"
"No, he isn't. It's nothing like that."
"Well, what is it?"
"He's easy to be with. He doesn't seem to want anything from me."
"And that's good, is it?"
"Yes, it's good. It's very good. You have such standards, James. Whatever I do, I always feel that I am letting you down in some way, that I'm not measuring up, I'm getting it wrong, I'm disappointing you."
"And you don't disappoint him?"
"I don't think he cares enough either way. And that's just so relaxing."
"Oh, well, I'm sorry I'm not more relaxed. Killing someone seems to stick in my mind."
In Separate Lies, you play a powerful lawyer in a seemingly happy marriage, but who discovers all kinds of problems. What drew you to this role?
I like the idea of playing somebody from the upper middle class, because it's not something I do. It's not a class that my background is much more sort of blue collar. So I thought it was a wonderful opportunity to play somebody from the upper middle class, you know, that's something I don't think I've really done much of before, and certainly not in this way. And I felt that Julian Fellowes, writer, director, had done a great job in sort of describing the kind of idyllic world that he was a part of at the beginning of the story. This wonderful kind of reassuring middle class world of, you know, wealth and security and beautiful chocolate box pretty England and all the things that he considers to be, you know, the cornerstones of his life. In fact, what he'd simply done, it turns out, is sort of build a prison for his wife. He thought he was bestowing upon her the sort of, you know, gifts of love and marriage and continuity and security, etc., etc. And what he'd simply done is imprisoned her. And I felt that a man sort of finding his way out of the prison that he's built for himself and his wife was an interesting story.
You know, and it's interesting because as you describe that, I'm picturing you in that role, and you convey this sense of privilege and power in little things, the way you stand, the way you hold a drink, the tone of your voice.
That's part of the business of acting, that you have to sort of figure out what it is that people find important. What are their values? What they want, above all, what it is that they want out of any given situation.
And this character, James Manning, what the high-powered lawyer, what is it that he values? What does he want?
Well, I think he wants more of the same. One of the characteristics of that class, I am led to believe, is that they believe in continuity, but the continuity is not the continuity between now and the future. It's a continuity between the past and the future. They want things to be like they always have been. If it was good enough for my father and my grandfather, it's certainly good enough for me and good enough for my children. You know, that in a certain sense, they lead a rather unexamined life. And that's the sort of penalty that poor old James Manning pays when he realizes that his wife is being unfaithful to him. Because, of course, his first response would be, but why? She's got everything she needs. What could possibly motivate her to have an affair with this fellow, and so on and so forth. So it's that sort of, you know, the more you can establish somebody reveling in the things of his power and wealth and so on, the more the more fun the audience will have watching him sort of looking again at his job and thinking, was this the best job I should be doing? Shouldn't I have been doing something else? Was this the right house to be living in, or should I have lived at something? You know, seeing somebody sort of rebuild the sort of moral universe that has been shattered.
Well, it is fun to watch. Yeah, it is fun to watch. Yeah. You were born in England. Your dad was a farmer when you were young, and then you moved to Canada, I think, from ages 5 to 11, right? And then and then back to England, where your father pursued a number of different activities. And I'm wondering, you know, it's a pretty varied background, kind of what those travels might have exposed you to, or did that affect the kind of creative insight that you drew on in your career?
I'm not sure. The thing, what it creates, here's the situation. As far as my family are concerned, from my father's family and indeed my mother's, but my father's particularly, they were farmers in the same bit of England for 1,000 years. There is just no evidence that any member of my family was anything other than a farmer. And my grandfather was a farmer, my father was a farmer, and to all intents and purposes, had things turned out differently, I would have been a farmer, and my brothers would have been farmers. At the point, but what happened, of course, that this was kind of shattered. This sense of continuity was shattered completely. For one reason or another, the farm went, and there was never any question that I was going to follow in my father's footsteps. So this sort of as it were, discontinuity, perhaps gave me a kind of rootlessness. There was no home. There was no nothing I could sort of return to. Nothing I could say, you know, that's the real me there. You know, I should be running the farm, but my brother is running the farm. There was no farm. There was nothing of that. So, and I think, in a certain sense, rootlessness, in that sense, is quite good for an actor. It's not necessarily going to make an actor, but it means they are much more wide-ranging in the things that they will allow themselves to be influenced by, that they're perhaps not as set in their cultural ways as perhaps they could be if they had that thing which we crudely call a strong sense of themselves. An actor probably doesn't have a strong sense of himself in that sense, and I think probably that's one of the reasons.
Reinventing yourself, in effect, in life and on the stage, right?
Yes.
Well, in 1995, you were introduced to a much wider audience with the film The Full Monty. And to remind our audience, this is the story of a group of men who lose their jobs when their Sheffield steel plant closes. And one of them hatches upon this idea of creating a male strip team. This is a remarkable film, and it was hugely successful. But I can imagine when you looked at the script, you must have thought, my heavens, what is this? What was your reaction?
I had no hesitation whatsoever in doing this film. I read it, and the first time I read it, I thought, this is good. And I went to get it made. And it was a point in my career where I decided I'm going to stick with films. I'm not going to do any more television or theater. I'm going to stick with films until I find out whether it's going to work for me or not. But with this one, I just simply had not the faintest hesitation in doing it.
What told you it was going to work? Because it seems to me so much of what works here is, I don't know, the chemistry, these guys, the way you all do it.
Yeah, well, the script itself is almost perfect. I mean, it was never changed from the day one filming to the time we finished. I think they added a couple of scenes sometime after, but just sort of general kind of fill-in scenes. But I thought the kind of the writing was wonderful and worked perfectly. But added to that, I thought it was one of the most brilliantly cast movies that I've ever seen. You know, there were lots of actors in it, none of whom I'd ever heard. Robert Carlyle I knew, but the rest of them I never heard of, and they turned out that they were just perfect for it. And that, together with, you know, all the rest of the kind of imponderables that go to making a film, it absolutely achieved what it set out to do.
Well, I wanted to talk about another role that you played, which was a real interesting part in an HBO film called Normal, in which you played a man in a small Illinois town who is married, has two kids, is active in his church, works in a tractor factory, but who eventually confronts the idea he believes he has in his heart a woman and wants a sex change operation. And I thought we'd play a clip here. And this is a scene very early in the film in which you, this man, and your wife, played by Jessica Lange, are getting marriage counseling from your minister, played here by Randall Arney. Let's listen.
I've been struggling with something for a long time. I prayed for years for it to go away, but it won't.
Go on.
I was born in the wrong body. I'm a woman. I've known it all my life.
Oh my gosh, Roy.
Good grief. Roy, I don't know what to say.
No, I don't either, except I love Irma very much. The last thing I want to do is cause her any pain.
Roy, are you having an affair?
Oh, Irma, no.
This doesn't make any sense.
Roy, I have to agree. I mean, you've been married to Irma for 25 years. You have two wonderful children, and suddenly, out of nowhere, you make this strange declaration?
It's not out of nowhere. I've been hiding it for years. It's been an agony. I can't go on living my life like this. I'd rather die.
Oh, my God, Roy. Do you mean that?
Yes. Yes.
That was my guest, Tom Wilkinson, and Jessica Lange in the film Normal. That's a pretty remarkable scene. How did you prepare for that one? Do you recall shooting that?
I didn't prepare for it in the sense that you possibly mean in the question. I knew what was going to happen in the film. And what I really wanted to do was make that scene a scene which something that was of central importance to this guy's existence, but this is the first time he'd ever talked about it. I mean, it's self-evident that that is what the scene is about. And so it is. I mean, in fact, because of the way we filmed it, the tremendous outpouring of emotion that was present in that scene, that I felt was present, happened a little bit in the earlier takes than the ones that you saw there, because it slightly took me by surprise that, you know, something that you thought, well, you've got to, this is something that he's not talked, this is bottled up. This is something that he's saying for the first time in his life. And it's of such central importance to him that it means so much. And anyway, the fact of the matter is, it's a tremendously kind of emotional scene. And I knew that would happen. There was just something that has happened in the last few years about my ability, what I... Years ago, when I used to do scenes where I was required to weep, I couldn't do it at all. And now I've turned into John Gielgud. I can weep. I can weep at anything, you know. So, but I knew that would happen in that scene, and it did.
Looking at this scene a second time, I was fascinated watching you in the moments before you revealed this secret, where you and your wife and the minister are talking about other things that might be bothering you, headaches, pressure at work, and we can see you as a guy who's figuring out whether he wants to just paper things over for another day or whether he is going to reveal this shocking fact about himself. And I was reminded of something that I read Todd Field, the director of In the Bedroom, said about you, which was that it was fascinating to watch you when you're not speaking or when you don't have much to do in a scene. And I was thinking that a lot of what was interesting about that scene was your expressions. You could see this guy struggling with this decision. Do I just pretend it's okay, tell a superficial story, or spill it out? What goes on in your head when you're not talking?
Yeah. Acting, for me, is, as I get older, even simpler than it was when I first started out, is that basically what you have to do is adopt completely and absolutely the point of view of the character you're playing. And that, what that liberates you to do, I think, is to, and I don't want to get technical and boring and actorish and stupid about it, it just means that you are that character all the time when you're doing the scene. As soon as it stops, you're back to who you are. But while you're in it, you're allowed to, you're thinking what the character is thinking. You are, and part of also the strategy of acting, and there's something else that's quite technical, is don't give stuff away. Don't play the end before the beginning. One of the things that you want to do in the course of a performance is make every little new direction, a new twist and turn, a surprise. Now, if you'd have seen my character looking doomed at the beginning of the scene, the audience would have been prepared for something weird. That you'd think, what? Something weird is going on with that guy. Ooh, I better watch it. But if you see a guy who's going along with his wife's sort of notion of a little tune-up, nothing important, and indeed, perhaps he himself is trying to put off the big moment that he can't, and it isn't put off until the instant he's saying it is when he sort of makes the decision that that's what he's going to say. So that's always what I would say to any kind of actor or, anybody who aspires to something in the narrative arts. Don't give the end away when you're doing the beginning. You got to do, surprise is perhaps the storyteller's greatest weapon.
You've had a lot of these interesting roles. I mean, that is one where you're a woman trapped in a man's body. I mean, the Full Monty in the Bedroom. How do you decide which roles you will take?
What are you drawn to? It's simple, Dave. You just follow your nose. You ask those simple, really instinctive questions like, can I shine in this role? Can I do this role better than anybody in the world? Is there something in it that I recognize? Nothing, it's not really not to do with the money or the director or the other members of the cast. But the first simple thing is, am I going to enjoy playing this character? And it's childish, I know. And I shouldn't, from my great age, be admitting to something so sort of, do I like the look of this toy? Or am I going to wait to the next toy shop and see if there's something even cuddlier? No. That's how it works. It's purely instinctive decision.
Well, Tom Wilkinson, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you, Dave. It's been a pleasure.
Actor Tom Wilkinson. He's starring in The Exorcism of Emily Rose and with Emily Watson in Separate Lies, which opens across the country next week.